All right. Hey, Gundam Maniacs. Welcome to the Gundam Explained Show. I'm your host, Adam Blue. Joining me today, Steven from Midnight Hatter. What's up, man?
Not a lot. How you doing?
Doing good. Doing good. We had fun yesterday on your show doing an activity because I had no idea there was a website to make your own Gundam deck from the card game. That's pretty sweet. So if you guys haven't checked that out, check out the video from yesterday. We built our own deck, but I was fascinated because as we were doing it, it was just, there's so many cards to look at.
I know. Yeah.
Time to finish.
And it's tough. Like one of the top comments on that stream was that like basically the only way to be successful is to have a faction deck, like Zeon or Federation or like Orb, you know, like whatever. Just load everything into one faction because then you're guaranteed to have all the same color, all the same faction. And we saw that with the card effects where it's like, you know, any member of the white base crew can pilot certain mobile suits. And
it's like, you'd have to be really good to be able to build a deck that doesn't have synergy and to still win. You know what I mean?
You'd have to like not even know anything about Gundam to build a deck that doesn't have synergy because it's like
purposely do it.
Yeah, intentionally.
Like, I wonder if someone could be that good. You know, I don't know if that ever happens. Like in Magic or Yu-Gi-Oh, is there like the certain specials that people like you have to try to use these in a match?
Yeah, I mean, people will tend to lean into some particular combos. For my purposes, like when I was playing Yu-Gi-Oh, my favorite deck to run was a Toon deck, and it was like all Toon monsters, which like. The Toon deck is criminally underpowered. Like it is so hard to play. It's a gimmick deck, you know me, I love gimmicks. I love LEDs. I love all the moving parts and bells and whistles and stuff, but it's not very functional. Is it? Nobody's ever won anything with a Toon deck.
No, cause that'd be cool. It's like when people play, you know, Dark Souls with no armor or without getting hit, you know, or yeah, it's like, or with a Guitar Hero controller, you know, it's like,
it's wild.
But anyway, if you want more information on that, because there's a lot more information, check Steven's video yesterday, just mainly because I think he does a better job covering that stuff than I do because he has a lot of background in that stuff. So, yeah, card game, assemble, yeah, check out his stuff.
Appreciate it.
But, yeah, what else was going on this week? I guess, well, so we're going to talk in a little bit, and this will be fun. I put together a list of the top 20 in order most powerful mobile suits in the 1 year war. And we're going to start at 20 and then just go down and then kind of see, does that make sense? Like, and I think as we go, we could kind of not argue, but kind of,
we'll probably argue. Like,
yeah, that's it. We're going to fight. We're going to have some internet fights about which mobile suit is more powerful than the other. No, I think that'll be fun. And also this is another example of an exercise I like to do to kind of help me shape my headcanon of, when I get into something, you know, that's why I like making the videos. It's like, what's an activity I could do to help me learn about it more? So then later I have that I can quickly pull from, you know, it took me a while with Gundam, all the different factions. Okay. What time periods did certain factions, you know, have certain stronghold on certain things? When did certain mobile suits exist?
Yeah. Well, and you've alluded to that in the past before, right? Because you've said that like building a model kit of a mobile suit helps you appreciate the design of that mobile suit even more. So it's not surprising that, I don't know, what do you call it? Is it some kind of exposure therapy where you're like forcing yourself to appreciate the
interior? Yeah, I wonder if that could be related to how maybe different people learn things, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Kinetic learning.
It seems like I'm the type, like I've noticed when I've done various jobs, various work, where it's hard if you just are like, you have to do this and then this and then this. Sometimes it's best to be thrown in and then try to figure out what to do, but then have guidance along the way, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
The intuition helps. I think sometimes if you follow steps too much, you might just be following steps and not really, you know.
Dude, I talk about that all the time. It's like, I would rather have someone working for me who's resourceful than talented because
that's interesting. Yeah.
Cause like if you might know all the answers, if everything goes right, but if one thing goes wrong and you can't figure out the answer, then like, what good are you? Because
that's interesting. Yeah, that is interesting. But yeah, so then other than that, there was a Gundam figure conference, which was pretty cool, or I call it a conference. It was a live thing where they were at a Gundam shop that had the figure. So what's cool is this isn't about the Gunpla. I appreciate how much Bandai focuses on action figures, because I still, and I don't know if it's just me, I feel like the action figures aren't a big deal. Like, it's the anime or the Gunpla.
But pretty much.
They still make badass action figures all the time. So obviously, I guess is it one of those things people don't talk about? Because building Gunpla or watching an anime, that has a sort of community component to it. But an action figure is a very personal thing, you know?
That's true. I don't know. It goes back to one of the things that you always say, and I this resonates with me, obviously, because I bring it up constantly, is when you're talking about people who make their own fun, like gamers nowadays, like kids. Yeah. Kids these days are not interested, like at least the generation that's younger than you and I, they don't care about like narrative driven games. They want something that they can make their own fun. They want Roblox, Minecraft. They want to be able to like make a game within a game. They don't want to be told this is where you go, this is what you do. And so Gunpla versus action figures, it's that same dynamic where it's like Gundam fans don't really want to be told like this is how you're supposed to be playing with your figures. It's like,
because the action figure, that makes so much sense. There's so many times a Gunpla builder that is a badass Gunpla builder doesn't really know the lore, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
but like with the action figures, a lot of times they're being developed to be a specific thing. You know, it's like, oh, this is the, you know, like I have the Lunamaria Hawk, like, you know, and it's like, this is, you know, her pilot. I mean, she has the other outfit too, but it's like the pilot, you know, she's got the helmet too. And I have her like standing, like she's putting on the glove, like she's going to go in the mobile suit or whatever, you know, that has a little bit of narrative to it. So, but you know, that's what's cool about Gunpla, because actually let me get to that. So I'm going to real quick talk about, and then don't let me skip over you when I'm done about stuff we got into this week. But to start, one, I completed the Master Grade EX seed with the third party.
Proud Defender?
Yeah, Proud Defender.
What is the third party one called? Like, what's its official name?
The one that was recommended to me by Taco and Yoshi. And it's called the White Slash. I think it's like nuclear modeling, the White Slash. I will say, and it could be me, they're kind of a pain to build. The stuff is just off, you know, and it could be because they have to use cheaper plastic in order to mass produce these third party things. You would have to be a very good Gunpla builder to like go through and like fix all the little things. The plastic's off a little bit. And the way the plastic is, the nub cleaning takes a lot longer. It came with two katanas, which is pretty awesome.
That is sweet.
It came with water slide decals that I put on it to make then this MGEX the Type 2 instead of just the normal Strike Freedom, I guess. But
nice.
You know what? I think this is so cool. I was going to top coat it, but like this reminds me of the Perfect Grade, because as I'm touching the pieces on it, they're different materials. They're more premium than a model kit. So like, I almost feel like and you know, some of it's metal. It's like, I almost feel like, or metallic, like I don't want to top coat it. I don't know yet. It's the same thing with the Perfect Grade Unleashed. I didn't top coat it because it feels like it has this plastic to it. That's really sturdy and strong and premium, I guess. And, you know, maybe down the line, if I start understanding more about the top coat process, like I might do it, but for now I'm just going to leave it like this. I had the other third party Proud Defender. It looks better, but it's too small. It's very interesting. When I do my review of this, I'm going to go over the two different Proud Defenders. It's pretty neat, you know, getting into this Strike Freedom like I have, and I didn't really before know too much about it, but it is interesting to see like how, where it's represented as a Perfect Grade, as a high grade, as, you know, a real grade. Like, it really is a very popular suit. So I think it's funny. Did I start liking it? Like, you were talking about that exposure thing.
Yeah.
Just because. Dude,
I'm telling you, like, I can pinpoint the exact moment that the Strike Freedom became like an obsession for you, and it was the MGSD.
Oh,
when you picked up that model kit.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember just the way you talked about it, like, oh yeah, and you know, like suddenly I appreciate Seed mobile suits more, and like, and then it was like after that you picked up their, your you know, Principality of New York gave you the high grade.
Oh, the
that was the Mighty Strike Freedom, right?
Oh, I'm thinking. Oh no, that was the Rising, which was before.
Oh, that was the Rising. No, okay,
what was it that was afterwards? Hold on, let me think. What was it? That is a good point. No, it was the Gundam Universe Strike Freedom. There, yeah, I think I bought the Gundam Universe one because it was like, would I really review the Gundam Universe figure? But because it was the Strike Freedom, you know, that's right. And then it kind of went from there. But, you know, a lot of it too was, it's like after watching Freedom, I loved the Proud Defender attachment and how it looked. Like, to me, that's a badass robot thing.
Yeah,
but I still wasn't committed, I guess. Yeah, until you're right, it was the Master Grade SD, and then I was like, yeah, I'm all in.
And then you were hooked.
It's funny though, I love how, like, in the Discord, how positive people are, like, when I'm like, man, I'm liking the Seed stuff more, and then people are like, oh cool, yeah, one of us turned to the dark side, you know. I like that kind of positive stuff coming out of
it. You won't get that here.
Yeah, no, that's what I was going to say, because really in the back of my mind, I feel like I've let someone down. No, I'm just joking.
No,
I liked it, though, because even when you were like talking more about Wish for Mercury, I was like, why are you spending your time? But at the end of the day, that's what makes Gundam cool, because these different series do have the essence of what we like that's wrapped in different flavoring. You know?
It's true. I mean, like, dude, there's so much that I appreciate about G-Quux, and the more I see the Zeta G-Quux fan art on Twitter, the like, I posted over in the Discord earlier today, a 4 and Psycho Gundam. Somebody did a G-Quux version of 4 and the Psycho Gundam.
That's okay. That's crazy to think, because,
and she was like basically ripped from the anime, because it's like, 4 already is that kind of manic pixie character. Right. And so then, like, to put her in that sort of neon vibe of G-Quux is like,
she sort of fits in. Yeah. You know what? That's interesting. Cause I just wonder how much, and we talked about this yesterday on your show, so I'm not going to talk about it a lot, but guys, check it out. Cause we did the time travel thing, you know, what little thing changes everything else. That's what would be interesting about G-Quux. Cause they could go the direction where it's more about the characters, but it could be, we're like, okay, let's come up with the Zeta version. But
I kind of hope they don't.
Yes, because then it's like, okay, you're almost forcing it, because you would think the things would diverge so much you wouldn't get to a point where Camille's making a Zeta.
Yeah, exactly. Might
get Camille, but he wouldn't be making a Zeta. It would be like something else would be happening. You know what I mean? It would be too coincidental for it to come back.
Exactly. Because, like, why would the Titans need to even make a Gundam if Zeon had a Gundam, like,
Know. There's so much. So, yeah, you're right. And that's cool. I love that stuff. In fact, I'm working on a video right now about the ending of A New Translation, Pulse is Love of the Stars, whatever, and the show, because I think Double Zeta is awesome. And so I'm just like, wait a minute, they're almost erasing Double Zeta, but are they? And so I just wanted to cover that.
Yeah. Dude, stop the Double Zeta erasure. Like,
but you even have that type of content too. Like, you have that video about Camille. Like,
yeah,
he was to join the Titans, right? And
yeah, like, if he had not gotten, you know, mind borked, would, and there's a lot of ifs in that, right? Because obviously, if Char Aznable had not disappeared,
indeed. Yeah, no, that's cool stuff. So then the other thing I built, I love how we go off a little tangents and I go back. Okay. So this is neat. This is the Mighty Strike Freedom. That was from the special edition Blu-ray of Freedom.
Yeah.
So it's got it's see-through sparkly, you know, something I would never do. Like, this is really my experimental phase. And then the wing of light stuff on it with the lightning. That was third party, and it came with this stand, and I paid $6 on AliExpress or something. So I feel like it's, and this, I think, makes it a cool piece, because it's a special edition Strike, Mighty Strike. And I got the, you know, the effects from AliExpress.
I wonder if Gundam wouldn't see some benefit from leaning into the third party market. Like, obviously not like the bootlegs, but like, but the third party market, it does really well for Transformers, obviously. Like,
and Hasbro, they license out their property. A Super 7 pretty much makes old school G.I. Joes now. They make the G.I. Joes with the O ring.
Wow.
Yeah. And
those are terrible.
It's crazy. They're going back and just remaking them pretty much. Yeah. And then they're making a line of Ghostbuster figures like that. And Back to the Future figures in that format. That's the thing we would have wanted as a kid. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Back to the Future. Because I know I've taken my G.I. Joes and pretended they were Back to the Future or something at some point, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That's crazy. That's so third party. You're right on it, man. Like, again, even Power Rangers, Hasbro has, even like, think about Disney. They don't make Star Wars action figures. I mean, they have some like in-house,
a couple of collectibles, but like
lines that's like Hasbro. Even Star Wars. So it's very interesting actually to go back and then think how different Bandai is with Gundam and Disney is with Star Wars when it comes to the merchandising, considering people compare those two franchises to their respective territories, you know, like
true.
But something I was thinking about yesterday is very awesome is Japan being its sort of island nation. It almost has this built-in isolation that it kind of allows it to have its own like little mini economy. So in a way, it's almost like, you know, compared to the United States. So in a way, it might make more sense for a company like Bandai that owns the IP to just make the stuff outright, you know?
I mean, it's two different schools of thought, right? Because like, obviously Disney, by licensing things out to Hasbro or to, you know, every single manufacturer of products for their merchandising, it allows them to make more and a greater variety, but what they sacrifice is the quality control.
Yeah, that
and
is
so it. It's just two different business philosophies. And I'm not going to say that one is right or wrong, because obviously it's hit and miss. Like, you can go case by case and say like, this really works for Disney, but this really doesn't for Bandai and vice versa.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I've never thought about that. Like these Black Series or Vintage Collection figures, a lot of times we wait until they go on clearance to buy them because they'll be at Ollie's or something. But with Gunpla, it seems like Gunpla sells out.
Yeah.
And it's almost like a consumable more than, you know, like an action figure is, you know, the Gunpla. But that's interesting because at my local comic shop, they always have the Robot Spirits on clearance because people are just not buying them. I kind of get it, you know. It's kind of random. Which
makes me wonder why they're buying them.
Yeah. So I've thought that too. And I was even talking, you know, Art Rovo Gundam sponsor, I was even talking to him about it, and he says he's going to test it. So he actually does have some Robot Spirits in the store, and I need to get with him and be like, what has that been like? Has it been selling, you know, and then considering I'm usually buying the Gundam action figures off AmiAmi used, you know, it tells me it is still more a Japanese thing. How often am I domestically getting my Robot Spirits? Rarely. It's like if Amazon happens to have it, but like the same date, usually it's months later. And then speaking of one last thing, in fact, you brought up the Rising Freedom because it was, Principality New York got it for me. So I got the Simp decals for this.
Oh, sweet.
You know what? It's hard to see in this light. I have some pictures up on my Instagram, but I did a top coat. Matte top coat with the decals. I 100% need to do this now with every suit, because one other thing about Seed when they're in Gunpla form is sometimes they look too much like a toy. I think that's that other thing. In animation, they look great. The Gunpla looks, but by putting the decal, this is just the high grade, by putting the decals and the top coat, it really makes me appreciate it a lot more. And I think I'm going to go back and do it with my other ones.
I was going to say, I think you just answered your question. Is you were debating whether or not to top coat the MGEX.
Oh,
and no. You just answered it.
No, I just because I guess differences.
The metallic parts do make a difference.
This already looks awesome.
Yeah.
Like the types of plastic that are on it compared to the types of plastic on a high grain. I don't know if it's really different. It might be the same, and just because of the size, it seems more premium. But you know what I want to add too? I'm going to say this in the review, but I know we talk about how sometimes building is boring. This yeah. was actually really fun and really easy. Easier okay. than a real grade, for sure. I feel like Bandai is making the kits. I don't know if easier is the right word or just more refined engineering that is very visually makes sense, you know?
Yeah, they are much more intuitive than they have been in like previous generations, because I was even just noticing that, you know, when I built the Real Great Epion, which is, you know, a fairly recent release, you know, it's only last year, and the number of parts that are just like closely placed on the runner together. Like if I'm building a leg, all of the parts to that leg are all on the runner in the same like quadrant. Whereas some of these old like 2005, 2006 high grades, you've got like one runner over here and you're going to grab one piece from here and one yeah. piece from there. And so your runners end up looking kind of like a mess because you're pulling from a lot of different places. Which I guess that means that there's a lot of color separation. Maybe. I mean, a lot of the runners are all the same color anyway, so it doesn't make that much of a difference. But yeah, I mean, it's just a lot more thought goes into the actual build process, which I don't know if people appreciate that or not.
Okay. Another thing you brought up, I'm glad, because yeah, when I was building it, there did seem to be a kind of logic with the runner order. And I even liked when I would be working on a part, it would say, grab these runners.
Yes.
And I like that. And then, yeah, even from there, it seemed like they, and I, what I love, I don't know if you guys do this. If I clip the last piece off of a runner, I'm looking at it. I go to the box. I lift up everything in the box and I put it down at the bottom. And I'm like, I'm never having to touch that again.
Yeah.
That runner, it's gone.
Done.
And it's like, and then it's so nice to see all these stacked runners, empty runners as you're getting done. Because I will say when we've talked about, you know, when we complain about building, I will say it's probably more related to cutting off the runner and cleaning than really it is snapping together. Snapping together is kind of fun.
Yeah, that part's definitely the most enjoyable. But yeah, I mean, like, I am notorious for not assembling like every accessory that comes with a kit, or like if there's multiple hands, I'll usually just pick out the hand that I want that's going to hold the weapon that I'm going to give it. And then like I leave the other one on the runner because I'm just like, I'll get around to it eventually. Spoiler alert. I never get around to it. Like,
yeah, that's funny, man, because I have to make sure this is an obsessive thing. I make sure the runner's clean.
You got
it. Like, I'm not going to use a part. I get a baggie that I put the accessories in, even if I'm never going to use a part.
That's so funny, man. Yeah.
Yeah, the different things. In fact, this weekend I have tons of Gunpla boxes full of runners that have been in the attic. And when we were rearranging to put the Christmas stuff back up, I realized I ran out of room. And I had already done this like a year ago or so, where put tons of the runners in the recycling. They take that. And then I do the thing where I keep the top box. So yeah. I can
break it down and like put it in a binder or something like that.
Yeah. So I got to figure out where I'm going to put those, because I do kind of have them just kind of into this weird stack, because it's a mix of like the Nightingale size box and like a accessory box. So yeah, why do I need an accessory box? Yeah, I can just throw that away. Okay. Now, speaking of figures, I want to show something off here real quick. This is when I think like Bandai knows their audience, right? So we've got this Lacus Klein action figure, or Lacus, depending on who knows what's right in this world, but one of those. And that's cool, because the Mighty Strike you see in the background is the Metal Robot Spirits Mighty Strike Freedom. I have the video review up of that. I love this thing. It's that gold really sells it. But so she comes with, it's interesting that it's a stand that looks like a Proud Defender, but then it's the cockpit of the Proud Defender, I guess. And then they make it where you can detach her bottom legs and attach this bulbous bike version. It's pretty amazing that they did this.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I need one of these like for research purposes.
Right.
For the anatomy. Like, there's definitely some sculpting advice I could gather from this.
No, but I think it's funny because it's almost, to me, I feel like it's almost like a joke, you know, but almost like it's serious, but hey, we know this is a little funny thing, you know, it's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, it could be a cultural thing, you know, the way, you know, here in the West, people react to sexualized things versus maybe in Japan, because narratively, Lacus Klein isn't a sexual character, even though she gets sexualized.
Yeah. But
Mir Campbell actually becomes that actual embodiment, whereas Lacus Klein has these goals that are beyond, you know.
Which is just, you know, goes back to how much better Destiny is than Seed. Is like, just Mir Campbell's arc is so awesome, the way that it's almost like a commentary on the character of Lacus Klein herself, not just like being a doppelganger, but also like, hey, you guys that are fans of the Lacus Klein character, like, here's a mirror, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why people don't like it. Maybe that's why people don't like Destiny. Is exactly. Because it's a little,
a lot of times when these shows or movies or stories, they start becoming self-referential in a way to almost talk down to what it is, but not, yeah. Not in a Last Jedi way where it's subverting, but more of the characters almost kind of facing their reality. Zeta is almost just about that because you have Char, yeah. Quattro, you know, and Destiny has a lot of those Zeta type vibes.
It does, for sure.
Yeah, that's why I like it. It's crazy. So there is right now there is an SH figure arts Lacus Klein action figure. It's not one I would buy. I was thinking about it, and then Armad Ian, he has, and he was kind of showing it to me and how it's just kind of a quality control issue type of figure, like how she stands or whatever with their legs.
Yeah,
I think it is so cool that they have a line of these SH figure arts Seed figures. It's amazing that they're doing this with Seed Freedom that just came out. If they did this with Cuckoo's Doan's Island or with Hathaway.
Yeah.
I would be collecting those action figures, having Kenneth Slegg type of action figure. All those, the very UC, you know, and I've got those little ones that are pretty cool, actually, I got to admit. But
well, they did make a Doan, like, GMG figure, but not a figure arts.
Right, exactly. So they do have the
figure arts are more accessible than.
Yeah. And so, actually, it's funny because I would prefer. Here's the thing. I don't know, actually. Would I prefer 6-inch or this scale of UC Gundam, or would I prefer them to stick with the... Because I can army build. Mm-hmm. I have 6 Zeon soldiers and 6 EFSF soldiers or EFF soldiers. So anyway, maybe this was therapy for me to see if I can talk myself into with you buying this. I don't know.
Yeah, I think we both need one.
Just to
feel it out, you know, just to get a handful.
Oh man.
No, you know, it's funny. I've been watching a lot of like anime openings and endings and stuff like that. And it's funny because Seed is like infamous for having like all of the characters nude during the opening credits.
Oh. Yeah, it's very much that type of show.
And it's not a sexualized, I mean, or well, it doesn't feel to me like an overly sexualized thing. It's like almost like a thematic nudity. Right.
No, I know what you mean. And I feel like that is a cultural difference that I still haven't wrapped my head around when it comes to Japan and that sort of stuff, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Like nudity, it's almost like a lot of times here in the West, nudity automatically means something bad.
Right.
But it's like I'll watch these old Japanese and even Chinese shows, and sometimes they'll have a kid in it, a little kid, and they're naked. But it's like it's not a big deal. It's just a kid, you know, but it's the thing in the West of like.
Oh, yeah. I mean, dude, Dragon Ball was like practically half of Dragon Ball was Goku running around and like, you know, full frontal. And I'm like,
oh, really?
I mean, this is funny, but like.
Yeah, so I think for us, it's like, oh my God, but like, yeah, that's what...
We're just prudes.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what's cool about learning about other cultures at the end of the day. Like, for you kind of pick up on differences, like, and then it kind of sticks with you, you know?
But again, you know, what I have to question is, with a figure like this coming out, where is our Cecilia figure from Witch from Mercury?
I know they have so many figures from Witch from Mercury. They have two different versions of Saleta and Mjolnir.
Right. And they have Chuchu and Nika.
Yeah.
Which Nika was an odd choice for me.
Yeah, I felt bad for her character. That was the one where everyone hated her. And I was like, but she was, it wasn't her fault. She was kind of trapped. But
yeah.
I got to say, our mod Ian says, from what you were talking about, that opening, it represents vulnerability.
Mm.
Good. That's a good call.
I mean, if you know what you ought to do is you ought to get with DreamSpeak, because, you know, obviously one of the nightmares that people have is like standing up in the middle of school and being naked. And it's like, the exposure. You know,
that is a good one, because that's one of those really basic ones. And I don't think I've talked to him about that. That's a good idea. Okay. Well, there's that figure. Okay. Here's something else. Here's some more news. They announced Super Robot Wars Y, because
why?
That was pretty good.
Why another Super Robot War? No.
Well,
I bash Super Robot Wars a lot, but like, honestly, never played a game. I just, yeah.
Okay. So to me, it's almost similar to G-Generation Genesis. I would say it's the, and people correct me in chat, you know, there's like Shining Force and Fire Emblem. And I know it's been a while, but those are very different types of turn-based strategy. And I like both of them. I think this is more of a Fire Emblem like, and I want to say SD Generation, those are more of the Shining Force like.
Okay.
I could be wrong, because I think Fire Emblem, it's really about the characters. In Super Robot Wars, it's like that. Since it's these crossing over, it's really about the characters and, you know, and losing them and how that impacts. I could be wrong with that analogy, because I'm not the biggest strategy guy, but that's what I got from. I would say, Steven, you would like playing these games.
I probably would. Yeah. Like I said, my bitterness towards the Super Robot Wars franchise comes from people telling me that my interpretation of Camille is wrong because of how he was in a Super Robot Wars game. I'm like, so
funny. I get it. Or it's like a fun little cutscene between a character and a game, and then people take that as.
Yeah, because people do it with Dynasty Warriors as well. Like, especially, I mean, we've got G Gundam on the screen here. Everyone loves that whole, like, oh, you know, Master Asia would have totally put Char in his place. And it's like, I'm pretty sure Master Asia would be killed by anyone in UC. But
it's cool, though. Like, I don't know.
No, it's fun. I do like these kinds of, I mean, it's cool to have like this kind of mashup mecha game.
Right.
And a lot of franchises that don't typically get love. Like, I mean, you get Ideon in here.
That's a really good point.
Yeah. Like there's no Ideon video games. So
yeah. I forget who I was talking to. I think I was talking to Talos earlier, how I was saying, like, I feel like for Bandai, it's easy. Here's another G Generation game. Here's another Robot Wars game. You know, because it's like they don't look like they're the most highly produced. Oh yeah, the other part is it's not going to be on Xbox. It's the only platform.
Won't you start this again?
Which it's crazy that they're doing that, which is weird. But at the same time, you know, there's that whole leak that happened. The screenshot showing the new Xbox interface having the Steam icon. So it would mean you could technically then buy it on Xbox when they start doing the, but I, again, so that's what I'm trying to say. It's like, it's not like we're getting a new mecha game,
right?
We're getting just another of this that doesn't require a whole lot. It's not being ported to Xbox. So this is kind of their budget filler title, do you think that explains then why the G Generation Eternal is a mobile game? And this is going to consoles and PC. It's like almost the same market.
Yeah, you know, like in in theory, I don't mind I almost said Super Robot Wars, but yeah, G Generation going to mobile because it does feel like a mobile game at the end of the day. Exactly. And if that means that a wider audience can play it, then so be it.
Yeah, I'm wondering what is that end goal? Is it the wider audience or is it the gacha? But then you think they would want to do that with Robot Wars because then there's more IP they could milk.
That's true.
So, yeah, let's just see. I guess my only reservation is I want to see more risk-taking Gundam video game stuff. I feel like what Gundam did to anime, it can do with games. I mean, Star Wars almost did. Again, not like that Star Wars changed games, but when a Star Wars game came out, it was kind of cutting edge for what it was trying to do. Gundam's games were like that in the past.
They were.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating because a lot of those games didn't end up getting ported to they never got localized in English and they never got ported to, you know, consoles that were widely available in, you know, the United States. And so it's like, you know, instead of if Gunpla is still the main thing that makes Gundam money, and I'm going to go back to my old Sonic movie analogy where it's like, you know, if you're going to make a Sonic movie, why make Robotnik skinny? Like, because the idea is to get people to go and buy the Sonic games. And if they play the Sonic games and Robotnik's fat, they're going to be like, why isn't he skinny like the movie?
You know,
so, like if you're going to make a new Gundam, like a new Gundam anime or a new Gundam video game, why not make it the same things that's in the Gunpla market already? Like making G-Quux means that you have to make a whole new line of Gunpla. Whereas if you just made, you know, an updated 0079, you can still sell the same RX-78 that you've been selling for the past 40 years.
Yeah, it's interesting how they go about that. It is. But
that's one man's opinion.
No, but really just kind of stepping back and thinking all the new Gundam they do make kind of pushes other previous stuff from being kind of remade or, you know, whatever. But, and then, cause you look at something like Star Wars, which it's gotten to the point where I stopped clicking the action figures, but there's so many new ones that come out now from the new shows that I can't even keep up. But okay, let's do this fun little activity here. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to stop sharing with you, Steven.
Oh, take it away from me.
Yeah. Okay, guys, we're going to play a game. I've got a list of 20 suits from the one-year war. We're going to go into order from least powerful to most powerful. Curious what Steven thinks. Curious then what the chat thinks. And I think this is very interesting. So, one-year war. We're going to start with number 20, Guff Custom.
Wow.
Because at first you think, no, that's one of the most powerful suits during the one-year war.
I guess it does depend on how much is in this list, like how much is being baked in, because maybe it's not.
Okay, so let's go to number 19. RGM-79G, GM ground type.
Well, that just seems, how is that possible? Because the Guff Custom took out like three of those things.
Well, that was Norris Packard.
That's true.
But if we're strictly from the mobile suit perspective,
nuts and bolts, yeah.
Just because if the GM is really just a mass produced, you know, lesser version of the Gundam, and at the time it was built, it would be using, technically, you would think it would be using more advanced technology than even a Guff Custom.
The GM ground type can field a beam rifle. The Guff Custom.
Oh, yeah, there's all that stuff, the beam weaponry.
Yeah.
That's a good one, actually.
Makes a
difference. That's a good thought. Okay, well, then what about this for number 18? The MS-09 Dom.
Hmm. That sounds fair.
Yeah, it does. And then right after that, the Rick Dom.
Well, yeah, I guess so. I mean,
yeah, because I think it's just space. Yeah.
Space and ground.
Let's see. Okay, then next, number 16, the RGM-79 SPGM Sniper 2.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised that that's not higher, but that's a good one.
Okay. Then after that, again, this would be more powerful. Number 15, the RX-79G Gundam ground type.
Man, I bet there's a lot of people that would dispute that.
Yeah, well, you think so? Okay. Yeah. I think this is a pretty good list so far.
Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised that the Ground Gundam and the Ground GM aren't closer, since they're technically the same mobile suit, just one has a V-fin on it. So,
oh, that's actually a really good point. I didn't think about it that way. What then does that mean? The Dom and Rick Dom would have, and the GM Sniper would have over it. That's a good one. We'll have to come back to that. Okay, so here's something different. Number 14, the MS-14A Gelgoog.
That's just impossible.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was better than the Gundam during the one-year war, or at least on par with the Gundam. So I might be thinking ahead. It's like, if the RX-78 is the number one, Gelgoog has to be number two.
Well, let's see. Number 13 is the Gelgoog, but Char's Custom.
Okay, well, that's fair.
12 is the RX-79G EZ-8, which, if they were to enhance the armor, I always think if something's being repaired, it's still a little weaker. But were they able to enhance the EZ-8 beyond what its capabilities were?
I don't know. I mean, it doesn't seem like it.
I wouldn't think so either. I would think it was just a cool repair job.
You know? And it is a cool repair job. Like, I like the chest armor that they put on it.
Yeah. Okay. Here's a FA-78-1 full armor Gundam for number 11.
Wow. And I assume that's the proper FA. It's not like the Thunderbolt version or something like that.
Exactly. Yeah. And then number 10, the Gundam Mudrock.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
I'd probably put it in the top 10 too.
Okay, so 9 and 8 is the RX-78-5 and 4.
Okay, yeah.
Because now we're getting to very powerful mobile suits here. So here's number 7, the MSN-02 Zeong prototype.
Okay, is that different from like the regular Zeong, or is it like a
pre-production version? That's all I have.
The one that Char used?
Maybe not the one Char used. There's more. There's more.
Okay.
So actually, number 6 is the RX-78-2 Gundam.
Okay.
Which is interesting.
That sounds about right, honestly.
Because it's also another spot in this list. that must have supposed to be something else. Let me look at my notes.
Oh, maybe it's like the 78-1 and 78-3, 78-2 and 78-3, like the G3 Gundam.
No, let me get to it, because maybe there is.
Okay.
So let's keep that in mind, although then it disputes some other things. So number 6 was the RX-78-2 Gundam. Number 5, the Kampfer.
That thing's trash.
But is that really more powerful than a Gundam, a stock Gundam?
I wouldn't think so.
Yeah, unless it just has to do with its weapon loadout and its maneuverability. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely like a hit and run, like light armor.
Yeah.
Mobility unit.
So number 4, this is cool. Saikamu System Zaku, Bishop type.
The Bishop's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'm honestly surprised that it's that high.
Yeah.
Like higher than the Zeong.
Well, number 3 is the Zeong. So this is the one without its name. And number 2 is the perfect Zeong. So the one with the legs. And then number 1 is the RX-78-2 piloted by Amuro. So that's kind of weird that this list that
is a distinction. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah,
so it's like if we weren't considering the pilot, the RX-78-2, according to this, is, you know, a little further down. And it could be that by then the Saikamu style, because it was Zeon first that was developing the Saikamu systems and mobile suits anyway. And that's probably what's giving them their edge. That's why the RX-78-2 Gundam would be below the Saikamu, even the Saikamu Zaku. But that
makes a lot of sense.
Amuro, it's number 1. The only thing is the Kampfer being number 5. The Kampfer is an
oddball up there for sure, especially compared to like the Gelgoog.
So I would even, exactly. So I would even think you would be lower than the Gelgoog higher, depending on what order.
It's like golf, right? The lower is, I don't know.
Let's see. Oh, Neon Wave is saying, no, Alex, hey, you know, good call. So there's a bunch of suits that weren't on here. So an Alex, I think, would be probably a little, wouldn't it be more powerful than the Gundam?
I mean, it would have to be at least more powerful than the camper, because I don't think that Christina was a better pilot than Mikhail.
Right. And wasn't that where it did have some Saikamu stuff in it, or the beginnings of biocomputer maybe?
It just had like the magnetic coating.
Oh, okay. So
yeah,
it,
like,
okay. Well, cause it was the new type. The Alex, remember it was the NT?
Yeah. Type? So, I mean, it was designed for Amuro, but I don't know. But
not that it necessarily had some sort of technology. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely no like Saikomu stuff.
And I guess, yeah, that's kind of Ultramus is saying, Alex was 0081, but I guess, well, not really, because it was.
Well, it's Christmas of 080.
Right. Which, or of 79.
Oh, yeah, of 79.
Yeah. To 80. I think 0081, you're probably thinking of the amazing game that came out on the PS3.
That's what I'm saying. We need more of those.
I know. Okay, so. Any other?
How do you feel about this list? Like, what's
so I think the list is pretty cool, because what I like is there's some suits in there you're not really thinking about too often. You know, like I would wonder where a GM and a Zaku is on this list. So,
right, if they don't even make the top 20,
yeah, exactly. So the Zaku would, even though that is a badass Zaku 2 badass suit, it's a standard. Char Zaku 2 is not even in the top 20. So what's interesting, yeah. The GM isn't in the top 20, but the GM ground type is. So I would assume the GM must be like not too far behind.
Yeah. Well, and some of them, it's like, you know, Char's Gelgoog, for instance, like Char's Zaku, they've said it has some structural differences. Like, obviously, you know, we're going to talk about like delimiters removed and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's something to do with the antenna, had a little bit more.
Yeah.
It's
painted red, so it goes a little faster. I don't know.
Yeah,
but like Char's Gelgoog, as far as like raw output, you know, as far as I know, it's pretty much the same as a stock Gelgoog. It's just painted red.
Good question. Maybe that needs to be a video I do, because that's one I haven't looked into, because, and I hate to say this because we had a celebrity on your show. I'm not into Gelgoogs. I'm not into.
Can't believe you.
They just look like. How do I explain what they look like? They look like giant bears, maybe, or something, and not a bear guy.
They do have a teddy bear esque appeal to them,
which I don't know if I should be scared, but I don't feel like I would want to show up to a party piloting a Gelgoog. Like, look at a guy with a Gelgoog, but
freaking nerd. Like,
you know, and Char obviously did for some reason. You know?
Yeah, true. And what's interesting about that is, like, so alluding to something that I might be may or may not be working on. I was, you know, just physically measuring like the height of a Gelgoog compared to the Gundam, because the Gelgoog is 19.2 meters tall compared to the Gundam's 18 meters.
Yeah.
So it's got like a pretty.
Yeah.
It's almost like a head taller than the Gundam.
It's probably an example of like, yeah, when they started just height increases over time with the suits, which, yeah, that stuff is pretty cool. Well, so let's think of some other, what are some other Gundam stuff that, okay, this is a good example. What are some other Gundam properties during the 1 year war that have come out recently that we can insert in here? Requiem for Vengeance.
Yeah.
I would think the Gundam EX would be in there, but I would think it would probably be on the lower end of the Gundams just because of its lack of armor, maybe.
Yeah, probably so. I mean, shoot, going back to 0081, the Gundam 7th should be in there.
But built in 81? Or was it... Was it a 1 year war suit that they just had that whole time?
I'm pretty sure it was a 1 year war suit that they had.
Oh.
Because like the Ifrit, for instance, like the Ifrit Noct, that one obviously had been captured during the 1 year war, and then they recovered it in 81. And then you have the other Ifrits. The Ifrit didn't even make the list.
And the 7th Gundam is really just an RX-78-2. Is it another RX? Yeah, it's like another RX-78-2, obviously, but with like the... Wait. Is it RX-78? What is the designation of the 7th?
It's RX-78-7.
Oh, okay. So it's just like a G3.
Yeah, exactly. But it's, yeah, it's just like the Mud Rock. Yeah, the Mud Rock is RX 78.6.
Okay, so that's, you know what? I'm actually now just realizing that, because I'm always thinking 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then there's G3, the 04. And it's cool that they have unique thematic.
That is kind of cool.
Yeah. Okay, so that is actually cool. So, yeah, and isn't that like a thing that there was an eighth Gundam, but we're not sure?
I don't know. That's okay. That would be news to me.
Oh, yeah. So, okay. So that makes sense for the seventh to exist in this, I think, then. So, yeah, that would mean the Alex also. That would, so anything that was really an RX 7879 Gundam.
Yeah, as long as it wasn't like the GP series, like the...
Okay, so then other than Requiem for Vengeance, we had the Noisy Fairy team.
Oh, yeah.
In their mobile suits.
Dude, that stuff's just silly.
Well, yeah.
Like, the riders.
Okay, so yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I almost feel like those suits would be more powerful than most on here, especially the camphor in that was just a loaded up camphor. They also had the... what was that big... artillery.
Oh, the Dom Nomades.
Yeah. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would seems like it would be super powerful. So, like, let's say this was supposed to be a definitive list. Would you think, oh, we have to take in consideration Code Fairy?
Yeah, I mean, even though Code Fairy, I mean, because Code Fairy gets into the same realm as like Thunderbolt, though, right? Like,
does it though? No.
In terms of like power scaling.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Because I mean, the full armor Gundam and the Psycho Zaku from Thunderbolt blow half of this list out of the water.
Exactly.
But yeah. Like, do they count? That's debatable.
And that, yeah. So that's what you're saying with Noisy Fury squad, because they have all their mobile suits are like really badass.
They're awesome.
Zeon suits. Yeah. And, yeah, so that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, then you've got like the Pale Riders and the Blue Destiny units.
That's right. Blue Destiny Unit 3, which is a badass one.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, there's a lot, because there was all those experimental bio computers anyway. So there, that would actually probably be around the Saikomu range up here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, if you're going to talk about like Saikomu weaponry being powerful, then like you have to talk about Hades and Exam.
Yeah. Well, cool. Yeah, I think that's it for this list. I thought that was pretty fun. I might modify it and then like try to do a video that's kind of like, here's what would be like the definitive, and just, yeah, get people to comment, you know.
I think that'd be a great idea.
You know, okay. So moving on. Okay. This weekend, any plans of any projects, anything Gundam related going on?
Well, I don't know if I'm going to be starting it yet, though, but you guys are hearing it here first. I am going to be starting a series of live streams every week, basically called Road to GBWC. We're going to be working on this little guy here. This, for you listeners, is the P-Bandai Zeta Plus, the C1 version from Sentinel. It's got like the extra long beam smart gun. I'm going to be turning it into the Zeta Plus C1 Hummingbird, which is this little blue and white guy. But so in my hands, I have the Converge line SD Hummingbird, which is, it's been such a great asset because I can actually see how these things fit together in a physical form as opposed to just looking at a picture. And so it's giving me some guidance about how I'm going to build this out in high grade. But I want to retain all of the transformation features of this because It can be standard Zeta. It can be standard Zeta Wave Rider. It can be the booster Zeta. It can be the booster Zeta Wave Rider. You can have just the booster legs, but not the booster shoulders. So it's like that modular configuration I want to be able to replicate in high grade form.
And did you say that is a Gundam Converge figure that you have?
Yeah.
And it transforms?
Yeah, it does like the parts former thing where, you know, you kind of like pull parts off and put them together in a different formation. So,
wow, that is actually pretty cool. I mean, I dig that type of style of weaponry anyway. So,
yeah, Yeah, it's so cool.
So I guess was that like the only representation of that you could find?
There is there's a 1/400 scale Gashapon figure of it that doesn't have all the transforming features, but you know, it looks cool.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And so you're saying you might start this weekend streaming, but you're not sure?
Yeah, I mean, I'll definitely we'll see what time looks like.
Yeah, hit me up if time, because you know, with kids and family and all that, it's always hard to find the time, because I also, you know, try to find time to do regular streams and
yeah, and I love the weekend Gunpla streams.
Yeah, I know. Maybe we could find a time to co-stream too, you know, figuring out the logistics of all that. But yeah, that would be fun. Because, yeah, I don't know what I'm going to work on exactly this weekend, because I've already built so much that it's like, do I just take a break? One thing that I was thinking of building, and it's going to be not a surprise to anyone, is the Mighty Strike Freedom High Grade. Of course, I haven't built this one yet out of all the ones I built. And it's funny because the first thing I did was the most tedious task, and I already put the stickers on the Proud Defender wings just to get that out of the way. I'm the type that likes stickers, but I take my time. There is no way when it's happened, but when I first set it down, it's right. I'm always.
Yeah.
But there's times where I've set it in and it just slides across. I'm like, oh, wow.
There you go. Such a good feeling.
Yeah, but there, and you've probably come across this, where sometimes after you put on that color or color correcting sticker,
yeah,
after a while you just tear it off and paint, because it's just like coming up or on a crease folding over.
Yeah, and I'm sure that there's like, you know, I haven't looked, but I'm sure that there's people that have done like the top coating, where they do like layers and layers of top coat and then sand it down to where the sticker blends in.
Oh yeah, you've told me about that before. Yeah. I am so big on the decals, like, because I feel like that does so much. I would love to maybe see what people are doing out there and perfect that. Oh, that reminds me, a member of both of our Discords in the Gundam Explained Discord, I think it was in the Gunpla or Collectibles, they posted this thing that exists, and I didn't know, and I found it on Amazon. It's a water slide decal machine.
Sweet.
Not really. There's no machine parts to it. Oh. It's basically a plastic thing that you put a sponge in and you wet the sponge, and it comes with curved scissors and tweezers. And it's like the way the thing is made is to kind of help organize as you're doing. And that's great, because the stuff I use is always a mess. I'll have a little thing of water, real thin thing, because I want to make sure that it doesn't like
floating. Yeah.
You get like a big cup, you pour it with water, and then you put your hand in to get, and you're like, wait a minute.
Worst is when it like curls.
Yeah.
It's like you go take it out and it like curls on itself.
So I found this like lid to this Tupperware that's missing. The Tupperware is missing, but we have like 20 lids, and it's real shallow. So I filled it with a little bit of water, and I'm like slowly walking it over to my, and I'm like, there's a better way. And then
just do a wet palette.
Yeah. Like, you know, so yeah, that's kind of what this thing it's like a wet is palette, in a way.
Yeah. And so I think, sponge. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a really good idea. And
that is cool.
Also the other day, the thing I had on my desk, I was like, sometimes I get bored really easily of water slide decals. You know, I'll do a few and I'm like, I'm going to move on. So I was like, well, I need a lid for this on my desk just in case. And then I was like, Adam, if you're going to do this, you can't accidentally knock it not into it and spill water. Okay. And I'm like, yeah, I won't. But I did.
Yeah,
I did
every time.
Luckily, I put a little bit of dish soap in the water. So I really just cleaned the table. You know, it worked out.
One way to look at it.
But no. Yeah, that's about it.
Sweet.
Yeah, good time. All that was a lot of fun. Again, out of this top 20 list, I kind of want to make it, again, not definitive, we kind of put a list out there, kind of give us an idea and understanding of like how powerful
you should call it definitive, you know, because everyone else is out here running their mouths online, right, stating their opinions as fact. Let's do it too.
You're right on.
Just lean into it.
Yeah, exactly. Who else is going to have the definitive list other than Gundam Explained?
Exactly.
You know?
Explain on these haters. Gundam
Mansplained. Okay, well, No, yeah, good show. That was fun, everybody. Have a good weekend. We'll see you next week on Steven's show and my show. Until then, be cool.
Cheers.